This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Since the legislature returned to business in January, lawmakers have spent a lot of time on health policy and on tackling opioid addiction, while so-called social issues have received far less attention. But two bills in this area did make headlines recently. One concerns abortion, specifically whether facilities that offer abortion services should be allowed to curtail where anti-abortion protesters gather. These are called buffer zones, and right now they're permitted in New Hampshire. The bill seeks to repeal them. The second bill covers families with children who might be gay or transgender. It would ban parents from sending their kids to what's called conversion therapy. Today in The Exchange, we cover both these topics this hour, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We begin with the abortion clinic buffer zone topic, and again, that attempt to repeal the current law. With us in the studio for this part of our conversation are J.R. Hole, Republican state representative from Dunbarton, sponsor of HB 1570, which would repeal the buffer zones. And Representative Hole, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Also with us, Donna Soucy, Democratic State Senator from Manchester and sponsor of the 2014 bill that became New Hampshire's current buffer zone law. And Senator Soucy, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you and good morning.
Well, what is a buffer zone, Senator Soucy?
A buffer zone is an area that would, under the law as proposed, be marked as a restricted area so that there would be the ability for someone to access a reproductive health care facility. We have buffer zones for other types of facilities, other types of instances. When you go vote at the polls, technically that's a buffer zone because people can't stand in front of the door and obstruct your passage into your voting place. This would be much the same way. It would allow for safe passage for employees and patients to access a facility.
So it's not a physical thing with concrete barriers. It's just more a 25-foot area, in the case of our law, mm-hmm. where anti-abortion protesters can't go.
In the case of our law, it's up to 25 feet, so it could be less. It would depend on the particular location and after consultation with local law enforcement and code enforcement folks. And it would have to be marked. There would be a sign posted, like signage either directly on the building or right at the point where there would be a restriction.
Why are buffer zones needed?
I sponsored this law because of my constituents. I had several constituents that came to me that said that they were attempting to access in Manchester the Planned Parenthood facility. And they were many times obstructed, accosted. People stood in their way. People yelled at them. They were intimidated oftentimes, and they were simply trying to access their health care facility. And in many cases, some cases, there were calls made to police, and you know, they were not there to witness what actually occurred. And as is often the case, when somebody sees a police cruiser, they temper their behavior, and that would often happen. But most people just felt uncomfortable and didn't go so far as to file complaints about the issue, but felt strongly enough that they spoke to me and to others, and we decided that it was important that we try to do something to provide safe passage, allow for those that want to express themselves to do so, but also provide for safe passage for patients and the employees.
Representative Hole, what's the problem with buffer zones, in your opinion?
So it's a clear infringement on the First Amendment. And the issue goes back, and we have to tie ourselves into Massachusetts, that implemented a similar policy more than a decade ago that was in the midst of a Supreme Court case during this whole thing being coming forward. In fact, when the initial bill went through the House, Senator Susi's bill, the Supreme Court was in the midst of hearing and deciding what to do about the Massachusetts ruling. And it was only after this passed within 3 weeks that the Supreme Court ruled on Massachusetts and said their buffer zone bill, which was 35 feet. And Senator Susi's right. New Hampshire is up to 25 feet where it was 35 feet. But when you start thinking about the sidewalks on Penacook Street in Manchester, they're 6 feet wide, right? So if you say up to 25 feet, you're impacting the entire roadway effectively. And the facility in Manchester has its own discrete parking lot. Once you drive across the sidewalk, you're on private property. And this has never been about what happens on private property, but it happens on what happens on the public sidewalks in Manchester.
What's the free speech argument about?
So the government is coming in and saying you can't talk about this any subject matter, right, or a particular subject matter on public property that the taxpayers have paid for.
Public property being the sidewalk in front of the clinic.
Right. So what the clinic does with their own property is the clinic's responsibility. They're a private property owner in the town of Manchester or a renter, and they have complete say over their private property. The question is what to do about the public property, and that starts at 0 inches away from, right? As soon as you get to the public sidewalk, we would never do this and tolerate saying you can't bring a union to the state house. They have to stay across the street. We're going to have a buffer zone around the state house, and unions can't come talk to their legislators. That would not work. So this is a clear infringement on people's ability to express their opinion.
Bunch more questions for both of you, but let me also remind our listeners that they can join us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're talking about the buffer zone law here in New Hampshire and a bill to repeal the buffer zones. That bill has passed the House. It's in the Senate now. We're talking about this for the next 15 minutes, and then we're going to switch gears for another topic. So join us now, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Senator Susi, what about Massachusetts buffer zone law? Representative Hole is right. The U.S. Supreme Court struck that one down. How is New Hampshire's different?
So we were very well aware of the Massachusetts case that was preceding the McCullen versus Coakley case. And being mindful of that, we specifically crafted the New Hampshire law to address some of the concerns that had arisen. Specifically in Massachusetts, it was a strict 35 feet. There was no accommodation of it being within. So our legislation was up to 25 feet. In the case of Manchester, it's conceivable that the buffer zone could be 16 feet, could be 15 feet.
It's more flexible than Massachusetts?
It is. It's much more flexible, and it's flexible for the very reason that it's site-specific. There are facilities in other parts of the state. There's one in Claremont. There's one in Greenland. Those each have very different land characterizations. The lots are different size. The Manchester one, obviously being in a city, is closer to the sidewalk and to the road. But I beg to differ with what my colleague just said, which is that we're absolutely limiting speech. We're not limiting speech. People can still speak to people. We took a tape measure when we had this hearing, and the person speaking held it to the front table where senators were sitting, and she backed up, 25 feet, and you could still hear her speaking. So the suggestion that being a few feet away would absolutely curtail someone's ability to still have a conversation with someone accessing the facility, I think, is wrong. The issue is that people are blocking and physically obstructing people from getting into what is private property in a facility. And that's really what we're trying to balance. We're trying to recognize that people have an opportunity to speak and people have an opportunity to object to someone entering a facility. But what they shouldn't be able to do is to make it so that the person can't actually walk in.
So the issue here, obstruction to the property, right, would fall under or impeding access to the property. Accosting, I think, was a word used before, right? These are things that are actually close to and if not violating other criminal statutes, and that's already on the books, okay? Misbehavior, mistreating somebody else isn't the issue at hand. If you want to have a conversation, you're not going to be shouting to them 25 feet away or even 16 feet away. You're going to come over and have a conversation a couple of feet away. You may walk with them while they're walking down the length of the sidewalk. In this case, there needs to be a compelling interest on the part of the state before they start taking away private property – sorry, public property and deeming that it can't be used in certain ways. And there is no compelling state interest in this case.
Senator Susie, are there already laws in the books, as Representative Hull says? You know, you can't impede someone from entering a building. You can't block their access and so forth. That's already against the law. So are these buffer zones really needed?
Well, I do believe they are. As I said, this behavior continues to this day, where people have difficulty entering the facility, where they feel threatened or intimidated by the behavior of others. But the state does legislate buffer zones in other areas. As I mentioned to you earlier, walking into your polling facility, many places have those wooden barricades or horses where the sign holders stand behind. We have a law in the books, RSA 644-2B, that prohibits someone from being within 150 feet of a funeral. And it also has a time restriction. It has to be an hour before, an hour after. You can't be near the funeral. And I would note that the United States Supreme Court itself that decided the McCullen versus Coakley decision has a 250-foot buffer zone.
Let's take some calls, both of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jillian's joining us from Hudson. Hi, Jillian. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead, Jillian.
I just wanted to kind of take a step back and look at, you know, really how disturbing it is that women facing such a personal health decision are faced with such harassment. You know, I think that abortion services are so important to women and, you know, allow them to have the freedom to, you know, if they're already mothers, be a better parent without having additional children, allow them to pursue school or career, to, you know, not be tied to a relationship that's not healthy for them to be in with the potential father. So, you know, I just really think that it's important that women are able to access these services and that we should take a look at the good that is available to women through these opportunities.
Well, Jillian, thank you for calling. And, you know, it raises a question in my mind, Representative Hull, is this really about buffer zones or is this about feeling like abortion is wrong?
I think the issue here is those who are interested in protecting the abortion industry, right, and the providers want to draw a larger barrier than their own private property. And as opposed to allowing someone to drive onto their own private property and conduct their business there, they want to encroach onto the rest of the public domain. And we wouldn't tolerate this for any other domain. But because abortion is a highly emotional topic, it's gotten it's actually made its way through statute, and then all nine Supreme Court justices came out and said you can't do that. There's no compelling state interest, and as I said, my example would be you'd never tolerate this for union workers around their own plant, right? If they were protesting a private employer or a public employer, right? They could walk right down the street. There'd never be an issue. But if
picketing
on the sidewalk in
front of the building.
But if we started doing that and saying, oh, yeah, well, you can't now protest your own company. You can't protest McDonald's because you're not happy with their pay. Not only can't you be on their property, but you can't be on the sidewalk and you have to be on the sidewalk across the street because that's 25 feet away. We would never tolerate that.
What about the voting analogy that Senator Susie has brought up?
The voting analogy is a little bit different because the buffer zones are actually on property. In this case, it's public because it's a public building in most cases where voting takes place. It's a school or it's a town hall or whatever. But it is not the street at that point, right? This is not a thoroughfare or a sidewalk. There are some polling places where the sidewalk may be in domain. But when you get out to the smaller towns, you drive to the facility. I mean, the 10-foot is actually the sidewalk entering into the building, right? So when I think of Bow, for instance, right? It's actually the sidewalk leading from the parking lot up to the doors to enter into the building. That's already on a piece of property. There are some polling places in cities where the 15-foot or the 10-foot buffer zone, per se, would actually exclude a public property sidewalk. But I haven't visited every building. Most of the time, the 10 feet only continues out for 25 or 30 feet or something away from the doors, and then you're free to talk to people.
I have seen polling places in Concord where, you know, the polling place is right on the street.
Mm-hmm. So in this case, right, the question is, and what they're doing is they're preventing particular candidates from office from standing by and interfering and with people on the way in. And it's 10 feet wide, right, up to the doors.
So is this about substance then in your mind? Jillian's talking about, you know, what she calls the benefits of abortion. Is this about the substance of the number of feet in the sidewalk and so forth, or is it really about just people
it's a clash of First Amendment rights versus individual rights, right? And society as a whole, what do they have is the ability to speak freely, unimpeded, okay, versus an individual saying, I want a level of privacy. And we're having a clash between those two constitutional rights.
Well, and the union example keeps getting brought up by Representative Hull, Senator Susie. And, you know, he's right. You go by certain businesses in Concord or Manchester or Nashua, and sometimes you see union people protesting on the sidewalk right in front, and nobody's saying, hey, union folks, you can't protest here. Go back 25 feet.
I mean, that example was brought up during the hearing as well. The issue is one, in my mind, of balance. I firmly believe just as someone can't yell fire in a crowded auditorium when one doesn't exist, there are instances where in order to allow people to have their say, to express themselves, to be able to speak, and at the same time to allow people to access health care, to access other services, there needs to be a balance to allow people to do both. And I think what we were striving to do and what we did accomplish with the buffer zone law was to strive to create a balance for safety of those trying to access and still allowing those that wanted to protest and picket and counsel or whatever it is that they were doing outdoors to still do so.
So how is the anti-abortion protesters different from the union picketers?
To the extent that they're, as I said, obstructing someone. I mean, the union picketers, if they're blocking operations, then the company would have the ability to take action. If they're engaging in some criminal action, they would have the ability to take action. I mean, I think they're similar to the extent that they're expressing themselves, but it's the actions of the physical obstruction that make it different.
Okay. Here's my hardest question. You ready?
Sure.
Representative Hull, is there any middle ground on this issue?
So I think the middle ground is where it was the status quo prior to SB 319 passing and becoming law, right? For the last 2 years, just for your listeners' understanding, right, the bill was passed in 2014 by 162 votes in the House. So just 40 – roughly
so four
– well, no, 162 to 100. So it passed by – a large majority, but there was not many people there that day.
That's
right?
What I'm trying to say.
262
yeah.
people out of the 387, right? Okay, so there was a large number of people missing during this debate. And it hasn't been enforced, partially because there's been a lawsuit pending that's still going on and may continue, actually, regarding the enforcement of this, knowing that the Supreme Court ruled 3 weeks after we passed this or that the governor signed this into law, ruled 9-0 against the idea of having buffer zones in the Massachusetts case. So I think the status quo is that was effective before this was private property belongs to private property owners and public property. People have the ability to say and do something that as long as it's not endangering or injuring others. And I think some of the concerns expressed have been very clear that if you're accosting somebody, file a police report. But there hasn't been many of those.
Middle ground, Senator Susie, real quick.
Middle ground was the law that we passed, and now that this case in the district court is behind us, we should be able to enforce it and create that middle ground.
Well, we'll find out what happens in the Senate. Again, this is past the House. We'll find out what happens in the Senate. Thank you both so much for being here.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Senator Donna Susie, Representative J.R. Hole. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we turn our attention now to another bill in the legislature. This one would ban what's called conversion therapy. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the email exchange at nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests with us for the rest of the hour on this. Joining us from Hart's location is Ed Butler. He's a Democratic state representative and a supporter of the bill, 1661, the bill to ban conversion therapy. And Representative Butler, good to have you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us on the phone, Brian McCormick, executive director for New Hampshire Cornerstone, a conservative advocacy group. And Brian McCormick, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Glad to be here, Laura. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. And let's just get some definitions out of the way first, Brian, to you. What is conversion therapy?
So I think there's a lot of conversation on this that really needs to be brought to the light. And a lot of this is surrounded around what this therapy intends to do, and also those that are providing the therapy. Now, a lot, you're going to hear from a number of different people that this therapy aims at seeking out individuals to change them from being gay to straight, and that's very far from the truth. What the difficulty here is that there are individuals out there who do have unwanted same-sex attraction, and this therapy is provided to them as an option. And it's just basically a matter of talk therapy. All these other measures that people talk about in terms of electroshock therapy or waterboarding, those are already outlawed by the licensure board. So what we're really talking about here is an option for those who are dialoguing about it. They're a very difficult issue at a very difficult time.
So the dire examples that we sometimes hear, you know, and we won't go into them on the air, but extreme measures taken to convince people that they are not gay or they are not transgender. You're saying, Brian, that's already against the law. This is just an opportunity to have a conversation about someone's sexual feelings.
Exactly. And this is not the case. I mean, if there are therapists out there that are seeking out to change individuals, that's not what we're talking about in terms of this bill. This bill reaches out into other areas. What we're talking about is individuals who are seeking therapy, whether it be for wanted or unwanted same-sex attraction, to be able to have the option to do that.
I want to hear from you too, Ed Butler. How would you define conversion therapy? And then we'll get into the bill and what it might do and what it wouldn't do. But go ahead, Representative Butler.
Well, conversion means to change something from one thing to another. So I would challenge the assertion that this is not about converting people from same-sex attractions to becoming heterosexual. That's what it's all about. The bill is to ban the practice of conversion therapy by licensed professionals only. It is something that is becoming much more clear that conversion therapy is harmful to children. This bill is only for minors. It's not for adults. It is a sensible, straightforward bill that was passed by the House 229-99.
So this bill affects only those under 18, Representative Butler, and does not cover pastors, priests, rabbis, and so forth.
Correct. And if those pastors, priests, rabbis, and others are not performing under a license as a therapist.
Okay, so any licensed therapist treating someone under 18, adults aren't covered, and so forth. Brian, did you want to jump in on that, too, that the word itself, conversion therapy, implies a change?
Okay, so a couple of things here. One is that within the purview of the bill, inside what they wrote into the prohibition, there is question. And I am not saying that they have not written it in terms of licensures, those who are licensed, but there are grave questions from the liturgical community as to whether or not they would be included. And that, I can tell you, that doesn't just go for them. That goes also for representatives and other lawyers that I've spoken to across the nation, that this is not as a matter that they're targeting them, but they could, by virtue, be included. So that's one question. Inside of conversion, this is the breakdown, is that it's not a matter of whether or not the individual wants to seek that counsel. It's a matter of whether the therapist is providing it with the intention of change. That what we're saying is that this is barring individuals who are seeking therapy for where they're at in their life. It's already outlawed for a therapist to go out and seek out an individual to try and change them. And I will agree with you that that is something that we shouldn't be admonishing or providing cover for. What this bill does, though, is take options away from people who may want to pursue that route, whether it be for religious observations or because of their own personal worldview.
Representative Butler, are you shutting down a conversation that some people may want to have with this bill?
Absolutely not. If, as Mr. McCormick says, it was already outlawed that therapy with the intention of change isn't possible, then this bill would not be before us. But there are people within our state, which I was not aware of when this bill first came forward, that are providing conversion therapy, that are telling parents and those people concerned and kids who are confused and having challenges with their issues of sexuality and gender expression, that it is not healthy for them to have those feelings and that they should work to become heterosexual. And it has been proven time and again, sometimes through tragic situations, that it is not possible to change something that is innate in you, and that what's better is to have that conversation that Mr. McCormick says is not being allowed, but this bill has nothing to do with. Having healthy conversations with family members, with clergy members, with community members, and with therapists about sexual expression, sexual attractions, what those are, how people or kids are dealing with it is a good thing. And if parents feel that their kids need therapy and the therapist is willing to have an open discussion about that, that's great. But trying to tell them that their feelings of same-sex attractions or challenges with gender identity are wrong is wrong. There was a study in 2015 from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which was a large study done by a large group of mental health professionals. And some of the key findings were that same-gender sexual orientation and variations in gender identity are a part of normal spectrum of human diversity and do not constitute a mental disorder. And interventions aimed at fixed outcomes such as gender conformity or heterosexual orientation are harmful and should not be a part of the behavioral health treatment. Those are clear. It's a consistent perspective from the mental health community. And what this bill tries to do is to ban conversion therapy, which is damaging and potentially abusive to kids.
Well, and I want to let you jump in too, Brian, but let me also remind our listeners that you can join us as well with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And at this part of our program today, we're looking at conversion therapy, what it really is, what a bill to ban the practice here in the Granite State would mean. 1-800-892-6477 is the number again for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And gentlemen, before we go to our callers, Brian, I did want to give you a chance to jump in. The American Psychological Association, the Academy of Pediatrics, and a couple other major health organizations have said that they have big concerns about conversion therapy. I just wonder what you think about their deep concerns.
So again, if we are talking about aversion therapy, if we're talking about aversive tactics to try and change somebody, there's a whole different conversation to be had here. Our point is simply that this bill goes too far. It goes too far. Inside the definition of what conversion therapy is, it is simply not what Representative Butler just defined it as. And I will also say, and Representative Butler, I would love to talk to you off this show sometime about where you're seeing these practices being performed in New Hampshire. I am not aware of those places,
right.
But I would like to hear that from you.
I wasn't either initially.
Right, and so I would love to talk to you about that.
So
but inside of this,
yeah, go
as
ahead,
far then. As conversion therapy goes, when there are individuals, this is a tough conversation, Laura. I have no question about that. Whether, especially in young people, when you are looking at the entirety of your world changing based on this subject, how you're dialoguing about this, having to talk to individuals in your life about this, there are individuals who, by virtue of what they believe or by virtue of where they stand inside of their social circles, that do not want same-sex attraction. And inside of how the bill is built, it will bar them from that conversation with therapists. And there is a disagreement here that the bill as written will do that. And what we are saying, based on professionals who we have counseled with and also from our own understanding of the bill, that they are limiting that conversation for individuals, not therapists, who want to have that dialogue. Now, that is what we're saying is wrong. In terms of therapists who seek to change this just because of a strictly held belief, or because of what they believe is right. Now, that's a different conversation. If these are individual therapists who are opening their doors, or clergy who are opening their doors to have a conversation about this with individuals where they're at, that is what we're saying needs to be an option and should be an option. And I will also say that within inside what the American Psychological Association has ruled in terms of the adverse effects of this conversation with parents and with therapists, that the parental response to coming out is far more weighty than the studies on conversion therapy. And I also believe that that's a conversation that should be had in terms of how this is handled well within a familial circle.
Well, Representative Butler, if a parent did, I mean, we're talking about minors, this bill doesn't affect adults. If a parent did want to send a child to this type of therapy, don't they have that right?
That's, I think, the crux of the argument. And I don't know. I liken it to my own personal experience. If my husband and I had had children and they grew up heterosexual, it wouldn't make sense for us to take them to a psychiatrist or a therapist and say, you know, my child is heterosexual and I don't think that's right, since I'm gay. Would you see what you could do to help them to understand that they shouldn't be heterosexual? The same thing is true for any parent who has a child who may be experiencing same-sex attractions, maybe coming out as gay or lesbian, or maybe having issues of gender identity. Those are natural, normal experiences that may be a challenge for the child and may be a challenge for the parents and may be a challenge for the religious community. But it is not something that should be identified as being bad or something that needs to be changed. It needs to be understood, and the child needs to be supported through that exploration. I think parents and communities want children to be happy, healthy, well-adjusted individuals. And in order to support that growth, it is good to help children and adolescents through their growth and development. Parents may at some point want to help their children in their explorations by recommending therapy. Therapy is not bad. Conversion therapy is bad and wrong and needs to be prevented, because abusive practices for children are not good. Mr. McCormick says that this bill would bar therapy for kids and parents referring their kids to therapy if they need it. That's absolutely not true.
Well, it would bar them from sending their kids to therapists who conduct conversion therapy, though, right, Representative
exactly.
Butler?
Exactly. And so, that's why the bill has come forward, because conversion therapy is dangerous and not healthy, does not support good growth and development for kids.
Well, we could keep going on down that road, and we probably will, but I want to bring our listeners into our conversation as well. We've got lots of people who want to chime in on this topic. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go next to Concord. Lynn's on the air. Hi, go ahead, Lynn. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Lynn Stanley. I'm the executive director of the National Association of Social Workers, New Hampshire chapter. Just wanted to chime in that the NASW and the New Hampshire chapter are in full support of this bill. Conversion therapy is not only ineffective, it does not work, and we just found out it is harmful. And the NASW has come out with a very strong policy position saying that this is unethical. It is unethical treatment for not only minors, but for adults as well.
So give us the name of your organization again, Lynn, because the phone line was a little hard to understand. Go ahead. Lynn, are you there still?
It is the New Hampshire chapter. Yep. Of the National Association of Social Workers.
Okay. Conversion therapy does not work, you said, and you think it's unethical. How widespread is it in New Hampshire, Lynn? Do you know? Because we're having a hard time getting a handle on just how frequent this is.
We don't really, at least our chapter does not have a firm understanding of how widespread this is. For social workers, it's considered unethical, would be one of those things, if you're a licensed professional, that an ethics violation could be brought against you. So I'm not sure for social workers if this is happening at all. But in just hearing some of the testimony from people who came forward and spoke at the Senate and legislative hearings, it is happening, and we want to make sure that we're heard in putting forth that this is not something that licensed professionals should be taking any part of.
Lynn, thank you for the call. Do you want to jump in, Brian, on some of the thoughts that Lynn put out there?
Again, yeah, if we're talking about the definition of conversion therapy, okay, and in terms of the practitioner providing that service that is strictly aimed at taking away or transitioning a person from being gay to straight, that's a different conversation. This bill goes further, and it includes terms like sexual attraction and includes terms such as gender identity and having conversations on those things with your therapist. And what we're saying is that the intentions of this bill reach further than what is being claimed in this conversation. And there's a disagreement here. There's a fundamental disagreement on how far the bill has gone. I've had a number of conversations where Representative Butler has already expressed that he doesn't believe that it goes that far. What our concern is that for parents who are doing this well and doing this right, and also for individuals, young people who are doing this well and doing this right, seeking out a conversation to on this topic at a very difficult time, that the proliferation of this bill will bar them from doing so. And that's the issue here.
Well,
in terms of those, and you heard her say it, that those who are licensed practitioners already will have an ethics violation brought against them if the goal is to simply transition someone from being gay to straight. That is not what we're talking about. We're claiming that this bill goes way too far in the definition of conversion therapy.
Well, and heading into a break, a couple of Facebook comments. John says, free market thought says they should be allowed to offer this service, but individuals don't have to participate. William on Facebook says, if a consenting adult participates, that's one thing. If it's a minor who does not consent but is forced to participate by their parents, that's where the questions arise. We'll take a lot more of your comments after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a bill making its way through the legislature covering families with children who might be gay or transgender. The bill would ban parents from sending their kids to what's called conversion therapy. We're finding out what that is, what this bill might do. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us with your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. With me for the rest of the hour are Ed Butler, State Representative from Hart's location. He's a Democrat. He's a supporter of this bill to ban conversion therapy. Also with us on the line, Brian McCormick, Executive Director for New Hampshire Cornerstone, a conservative advocacy group that, as Brian has been saying, feels HB 1661 goes too far. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, right back to our listeners. Eric's joining us from Conway. Hi, Eric. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, well, thank you for taking my call. I actually testified against this bill in the Senate, and we've been hoping to make some headway. I think there's a whole bunch of issues, not the least of which is free speech. A person that's a person of faith cannot be separated from who they are religiously and spiritually. Like our founding documents, is an inalienable right that's given by God, the Creator, as the Declaration says. And to have a person that's a member of my church, for instance, that's a nurse, which I have, that is dealing with something like this, you're going to hamstring her from her truly held religious beliefs in order to, she's going to have to violate her faith. And that's clearly not what our founding fathers mentioned at all or wanted intended in our declaration. But I have a friend, Dr. David Nixon. He has a website, bornthatway.org. And in 2012, Dr. Nixon had a young man that was sent his way to counsel. And he's a pastor down south. And this young man, Sam, was raised in a Christian home and went off to college after being raised in a Christian home, Christian school, all of that, really helpful around the church. And then he went off to college, and all of a sudden, a few months later, he came out of the closet stating that he believed he was gay, and it devastated the family. And some of the family wouldn't even talk to him, but his mom and his grandma, they just loved on him. And they asked Dr. Nixon if he could talk with him. And Dr. Nixon brought out something that Matthew chapter 19, verse 12 says. It says that there are some eunuchs which were born from their mother's womb, and there be some eunuchs which are made eunuchs of men. And I've always understood that a eunuch in my own mind was just somebody that was castrated or whatever. But the Bible describes that there are eunuchs.
Eric, can you relate this to the problem that you see with this particular bill here in New Hampshire, please?
Yeah, I think there's parents that have children that are struggling with this, and they will not be able to get the help that they feel they need. They're people of faith. And also, therapists, this therapy, it's not just a medical thing. It's also free speech.
Well, let's talk about that. And thank you so much for calling, Eric. And, you know, Ed Butler, we keep getting back to this issue of free speech. And I read that Facebook comment, too, before the break, that, you know, people of faith feel like their speech is being shut down if they are not allowed to discuss other options to a young person wrestling with these huge questions. I'd love to hear from you on that, Representative Butler.
Understood. I think that this gentleman is Reverend Ness, one of the local Baptist ministers in my community, and he and I had a lunch together to explain to each other where we're coming from and what our positions are. And I understand and respect the passion that Reverend Ness has, or Minister Ness has, about his beliefs and the fact that he follows his life, follows the teachings of the Bible. And as we have said before, this bill has nothing to do with a person like Minister Ness providing spiritual counseling to people in his congregation. It does prevent him from doing something that As you heard from the woman from the Association of Social Workers and obviously lots of other groups, have defined as an unethical and dangerous practice, which is conversion therapy provided by licensed professionals. So this would not prevent Mr. Ness or Minister Ness from talking about what he feels is right, and hopefully would not prevent him from talking about the challenges that that person in his congregation is feeling, and helping them to grow into a happy and healthy adult.
Well, the fear is, Representative Butler, and I listened to Pastor Ness's testimony, the fear is that eventually ministers would be included under this ban. Right now they're not, but, you know, eventually it might be extended to them.
Understood. And if that were the case, then it would come before the legislature again, and it would be debated again. And I cannot imagine in any context that the ability for spiritual counselors who are not getting paid for the counseling that they're doing and are not licensed professionals would be banned. That doesn't make any sense to me, and none of the bills that have been passed in the states that have passed this ban include a ban on spiritual counseling, and I can't imagine that that would succeed, but if there were something that was brought forward, it would come back to the legislative process.
Well, Eric, thank you again for calling in. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Going to Freedom next, and Jerry's on the line. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me on. Hi, Ed. This is Jerry Knurk.
Hi, Jerry.
So what I wanted to comment on is the parental right issue. I think we have data that conversion therapy doesn't work and is harmful. And it's really basically tantamount to abuse. And we do not normally grant parental rights to abuse a child. I think that's why this bill is crafted to say a consenting adult can do this if they wish to do so. But a child who cannot, we don't allow them to give consent for their treatment, would not have the consent to be able to say no if their parents wish to have them do this. And we don't really grant that abuse right to a parent.
So you don't buy the parental rights argument, Jerry?
Not at all, because we need to protect children, just as we might the other direction. If a parent didn't take a child to be properly treated for an illness, they would be charged with neglect. And that's appropriate, because the state does have a responsibility to care for the child and their rights if they would come into harm because of their parent's action.
How do you respond, Jerry, to people who feel that this is not abusive, that this is something that, you know, a parent who really does not believe that their child should be gay or transgender, that they have the right to seek this therapy for their child? I mean, you're calling it abuse, but if a parent doesn't think it's abuse, how do you sort of see through that or work through that?
Well, I think the issue is that we have to look at what data we have, and if the data does not support that it works, and we do have data that demonstrates harms, as the previous caller a little ways back had commented, then it would be the same as, I say, if any other kind of a medical intervention that might be withheld from a child because of a parent's belief or would be pushed onto a child if it was inappropriate and harmful to the child without any reason to suspect it might be beneficial.
Well, Jerry, thank you for calling in. And Brian, I'll throw that to you. We keep getting back and forth on this point as to, you know, whether parents should be allowed to do this or not, given the concerns by some of these groups that this is harmful.
Well, and here's, again, back to the point, is that this is not about that conversation in terms of the aim of someone coming in and changing something from someone from being gay to straight. This conversation being had by a therapist under the ethics that they are to abide by will be a conversation. It will be something that they are dialogued with. I understand what they're saying, but if this is done well and done right, especially from a parental perspective, which I will also note that the studies cited in this bill from the APA, the American Psychological Association, showcase how the adverse effects of a parent's reaction to this go far further and are definable and in a greater extent, not even to the extent that conversion therapy has not been studied to show any type of outcome-based effect. So that being the case, this is more about the process. This is about the process of doing this well. The therapist is the one that's in question here. And by the virtue of how this bill is written, you will bar well-intentioned therapists who are aimed at whose goal is having a conversation with individuals on a very difficult subject who need help, who want help, whether it is to move away from same-sex attraction or move towards it, to navigate that situation. Unfortunately, when we write legislation, it can have adverse effects. And what we are telling you is that this bill goes way too far in a number of different areas. In terms of the abusive conversation, you are going to outstep over the bounds of what we're dialoguing about here just based on how they've defined it within inside the bill.
Let's take another Jerry, spelled differently than the last Jerry. Jerry in Somersworth. Go ahead. You're on the exchange as well.
Yes. Good morning. I'm a member of the PFLAG Council and support a lot of families with transgender kids. I am myself a transgender woman. As I was listening to the show, I had a question, but I now have a comment as well. Being a member of a transgender community and knowledgeable about transgender children and their families, the children and their families are already under a restriction to wait until a child is 18 before a doctor can prescribe hormone treatment for transgenders. So I don't see why this bill would have anything different to do with the health care of a child until they're 18 and can actually consent to this. My real question is, if there are so few therapists providing a conversion therapy service in the state of New Hampshire, why would people oppose this bill? Because it's only very few, and to put this in place would impact very few people that provide this service. So that's
so you're saying, Jerry, you know, in the case of teens who might be wondering if they're transgender, this is a conversation that needs to happen a lot sooner than 18, because if they are transgender, there are medical interventions that need to start earlier. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there is at least one medical intervention that can happen, which is a hormone blocker. But they can't take estrogen or testosterone until they're age 18 and the child can consent to it, because that's when things will change. So to have children with families are already undergoing therapy for transgender kids. I, as a 63-year-old adult, still see a therapist on a regular basis. And part of it is just because the challenges we face in society for being who we are. So,
well, Jerry, thank you for calling in. And to both of you, I think you first, Representative Butler, you know, a lot of the research and writing around this does focus on whether a child or not thinks he or she is gay. How does the conversation change when it comes to a child who may think he or she is transgender? I want to hear from both of you on this, but you first, Representative Butler.
Thanks. The issue of what we're talking about, conversion therapy, covers all the issues relative to sexual attraction and gender identity. Professional associations and organizations are saying that the issues that children and adolescents face relative to same-sex attraction that they might be beginning to feel, or gender identity and confusion issues, all should be covered under this understanding that conversion therapy is not acceptable. And I would point out that it sounds to me like on one of the few instances, I agree with Mr. McCormick and the Cornerstone Association. We are not talking about preventing the possibility of therapists and licensed counselors providing healthy conversations for children who are in need of those kinds of services, or parents who are in need of those kinds of services. That's not what this is about. And this bill does not go beyond the issue of preventing or banning conversion therapy. I think the issue of gender identity is one that is challenging, but which parents, with the assistance of their communities and sometimes therapists, are learning how to negotiate. And we have many families in New Hampshire with transgender children who are getting the support they need and helping their children to learn a healthy expression of who they are.
What do you think, Brian McCormick? Is this a different conversation when we talk about children and this type of therapy and whether they might be transgender or not?
Again, this, and I will shoot straight with you, Laura and Rep Butler. And first, I want to take a second here, Rep Butler. I do want to acknowledge that he really did reach out to that pastor. That really did happen. That needs to happen more often. And I want to thank you for that, Representative Butler. You really did go across the aisle and reach out to an individual who believes differently than you. And those conversations need to happen. I want to take a second there. But in terms of this conversation, it is a very difficult sea to navigate, especially for a young person. And what we are saying is that this bill goes to a place, and I know there is a fundamental disagreement on the writing of this, and anyone who has a question, go look it up. You can see it online, HB 1661. That the way that they define conversion therapy in this bill reaches beyond what they are saying in this conversation in terms of including sexual attraction, romantic feeling, those types of things. If dialogued with a counselor about, could put them in jeopardy of a fine based on the way that the bill is written. Also inside of that, the way, as broadly as it is noted in terms of prohibitory section of this bill, it may include other individuals that we really fundamentally, as far as our Constitution and in regards to religious liberty, have a conscientious objection to, could include them. Now, I know that there's a disagreement about how that works, but unfortunately, the way legislation can function, it can include people that are not intended to be. And that is what we are saying here, is that this bill needs a thorough going over by good professionals who can come through and address this.
All right.
In terms of your transgender conversation, and I think that those individuals should have every option that they need in terms of this difficult discussion.
All right. Well, both of you, and I got to jump in there. I do apologize. We have to wrap it up. Thank you both so much for being here. Tough conversation. I really appreciate your time. This is The Exchange on NHPR.